up your frozen dinners, grab your TV tray, and settle in for another episode of the Plus Platoon, your podcast for all things Disney Plus, brought to you by Disney Plus fans. Watch along with us every week as we cover all the new, the old, the good, and the bad on Disney Plus. So put down that remote, don't touch that dial, and welcome your fabulous Plus Platoon host.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Plus Platoon. We're a Disney Plus fan podcast that gives honest, spoiler-filled reviews of movies and shows on Disney Plus. We'll look at new releases, coming attractions, and we'll even go back into the vault to revisit some of the classic Disney that's on the platform. Make sure you're subscribed and you will never miss a moment. I'm going to welcome back Kate. Kate, good to see you again.
Good to see you too. I'm wearing my baseball hat.
Okay.
To support baseball.
Sure. Yeah. It sounds like some of my teachers are like, yay, sports ball. Yeah. So next we've got Pete. Pete, how you doing?
Go Sox. They're wicked awesome.
Okay. Steve, any help on this one?
Uh-huh. You chose those two.
A couple of them I got stuck with. So someone said they were a Yankees fan. So. Guys, if you've not already, please like, subscribe, share. We've got some fun shows coming up, and that way you can know, like, we've got a couple special shows coming up. So we're going to try a couple different things, so that way you'll always know what's happening. Okay, this week, it is the 30th anniversary of the movie Angels in the Outfield. This is the one with Christopher Lloyd, Danny Glover, Tony Danza, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Matthew McConaughey, and actually what was one of his first ever roles, follows the California Angels when this little boy is in a foster home, and his dad says, yeah, we'll be a family again when the Angels win the pennant. Well, he prays, the Angels start helping, and then ends up that his dad really never ever meant it, gives up his rights. Angels end up winning in kind of a little bit of a bittersweet moment at the end. And he and this little boy he's with, JP, end up with the manager ends up adopting them. As Kate says, the signal that he uses to tell them when the Angels are there is flaps his arms. Okay. She wasn't trying to, you know, pretend she's a Philly Eagles fan or whatever, but
fly.
No. So, but
wrong sport.
Angels in the Outfield. I remember watching this when I came out when I was 12. So I went and watched it. Oddly enough, did you realize Joseph Gordon-Levitt was 13 when he did this movie and that small?
Wow. No, I did not.
Sure did not know that. Oh.
Derek froze for everybody else.
I'm back. Yeah, I froze for a little bit, but I'm back. So yeah, he was very, very, 13. I was surprised at that. So
yeah, he looked like he was about 10.
9 to 10. So anyway. Okay. So Pete, I'm going to start with you on this one. What made us believe? What worked for this movie?
I did find this movie charming. Honestly, my favorite part of the movie was like all the now famous people that were in this movie. And you already mentioned Matthew McConaughey, but Adrian Brody was one of the people in the one of the baseball players. Neil McDonough, which he's not as famous, but people have seen him in stuff. And he's Dum Dum Duggan in the first Avenger movie is probably, you know, where Marvel fans would know him from, but he's played a lot of bad guys and stuff in various roles.
Was that like the sidekick henchman for Loki?
We haven't watched one of those movies, but he was in the first Avenger. He was one of Captain America's Howling Commandos.
Okay.
But he's been as well. So he played the goofy pitcher,
right?
He was like the goofy guy that was the pitcher. even seeing Tony Danza, who, like, other than Who's the Boss, like, he never really had a movie career, and just to kind of see him there. So I really enjoyed seeing all these actors, even Danny Glover. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was a very sweet movie. I enjoyed the story of it because it was very, it reminded me, and I know it was a remake from the 40s or something like that. And it reminded me of an older movie. Like, it was not paced like watching it. I was like, this is from the 90s. 'Cause this feels like
60s.
Seven 60s or 70s. And there were very much parts of it. I liked the story, and I liked a lot of the characters. They were fun. So what about you, Steve?
I agree with you. It was a good feel good movie. I really enjoyed JP, the younger boy, the cute, charming, what you expect in sort of a Disney movie. I found him enjoyable. I remember, I think I saw this on VHS, renting it from Blockbuster. I never saw it in the theater. Overall, it was enjoyable. I liked that. So,
okay. You guys know me, I'm a sucker for a baseball movie. For most baseball movies. I remember watching this. I said I probably went and saw it in the theaters. If not, I know I rented it on VHS, and I know because it was in the late 90s, it was on TV all the time. And then it went away. And last time it was on the TV a little bit in the late 2000s. But it's been kind of locked up in the vault since then. And they brought it out because it was its 30th anniversary. I love the fact that the Tony Danza character, you know, he had blown his arm out, which had derailed his pitching career. On Who's the Boss, he played his character, blew his shoulder out, and ended his pitching career. So I got those little synchronizes, little nods to his other roles. Those kind of things I enjoy without it being so in your face fan service. I think Christopher Lloyd was underutilized in this movie. I think he was underutilized a lot in this movie.
He was barely in it, it felt like.
Yeah. But the parts he was in, he made a good, old wise mentor type thing of, you know, this is what's going on. And sorry, kid, this isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think things like the gal who played the foster mom, I remember her. She was the bird woman in Home Alone 2. So
sure was.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, Kate, how about you? What worked for you?
Well, you all took all of mine.
All of them? Really? I even held back some.
The casting in this was so good. The casting was so good. And just, it's so fun to go back and watch movies where actors who are now quite famous are so young and so just new and green. And it just was so good. Jason Gordon-Levitt, because this movie was heavy. This movie had some heavy themes to it. Right off the bat with the dad essentially saying, like,
I don't want you anymore.
I don't want you. And I'm going to file paperwork to not have you. And the kid doesn't understand what he's saying.
Pete, what were you?
I just realized I missed Dermot Mulroney, right? Yeah. When we're talking about future famous people.
Yeah. Yep. So, you kind of knew that was coming, that the dad was giving up rights. But the kid didn't understand. So, like, that's heavy. And then the part when they go to get in the car and he's like, JP won't ride in the car. And he goes, well, when he gets in the car, he gets a tummy ache. Like, that's some heavy.
Yeah.
That's heavy. Like, that's childhood trauma, man. That is heavy stuff. And I feel like they did such a good job of, well, Joseph. That's the one. Him. Did a really good job of conquering that heavy content with the eyes of a kid, not understanding, and then kind of understanding when the courtroom scene happened. He just did a really, really good job. The guy who was David Montague, his name's Taylor Negron. I've seen him in other things before. I can't remember what I've seen him in, but I thought he did a great job as the guy who sits on the nachos and has nachos spilled on him and then has the poncho and has
Yeah, you've seen him in a bunch of stuff too, right?
Yeah, I thought that was really good comic relief. I really enjoyed this movie. I wasn't sure if it was going to hold up. Even with all the CGI, I still felt like this movie, I would go back and watch this movie again. I think this is a cute movie. So that's me.
Okay.
Yeah. And even we didn't mention it, but the guy that played the announcer.
Yeah.
Right. You saw that guy and you're like, oh, he's always a jerk. And guess what? He was a jerk.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Steve, what about this movie struck out? What didn't work for it?
I think Kate's already touched on it. It was the CGI, even from the opening credits with the baseball coming across the screen. So jarring. And then I wish I could tell what my reaction was when seeing it the first time I saw it. But this time it was just the CGI was so jarring. Does not hold up. That part does not hold up. I think that was the biggest thing. Another thing was just, yes, it's a good film movie, but the story was sort of weak. It was sort of I think Pete mentioned it earlier, sort of this jarring little how it paces through the story. Those were my biggest two beefs with the story.
Okay. Kate, I'm going to go ahead and skip over to you. But this way, no one takes all of yours.
So I'm gonna... I actually don't have a lot of negative. This movie, I mean, it has really heavy spots. It is kind of a fluff movie. It's a bit of a fluff movie, even with the heavy, you don't even really realize how heavy it is until you go back and think about it. That's really heavy. But this is kind of a fluff movie, and it's really good for a fluff movie. So yeah, the CGI is rough. There was something else. Shoot. Now I'm not gonna be able to remember what it was. I liked this movie for a fluff movie, for a just kind of a feel good. Oh my God. And when Christopher Lloyd says he's going to be joining us soon. That's heavy. he's about to die because he smoked for so long. Hello.
All right. That's one of the things I did not like about this movie.
Yeah. I'll pass it off to you, Pete.
Because, and I think, so anyone listening, spoiler alert for a 30-year-old movie. Yeah. Christopher Lloyd comes in during the last game and says to the kid that I can't remember his name now. I mean, the character, I remember it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but tells him that Tony Danza's character is going to die in 6 months. And I'm like, whoa, movie, you didn't need to do that. you didn't need to add that extra tension to this last game. They're trying to win the championship and everything like that. That was just totally unnecessary. And to then just from that point forward, just play, they didn't bring it up, nothing brought it up again. Right. And I just cut that out completely. That just was not necessary other than to bring us all down. The main issue I had with this movie was it wasn't that funny. I think it's supposed to be a comedy, but it almost felt more like a drama than a comedy to me, because the comedy bits in it were mostly the guy sits on the nachos, very, very the outfielders run into each other, very, very slapsticky, silly comedy that probably appeals to kids at the time. But watching it now as an adult, I did, like, that's not stuff that's particularly going to make me laugh because I've seen it 100 times. And other than that, there wasn't a lot of humor in it. So it worked. I think it worked effectively as a dramatic story, but it didn't work very well as a comedy. That would be my biggest complaint about the movie. And I think with the somewhat slow pacing of the movie, that just kind of brought it down a notch for me, that the movie didn't 100% work for me. And just because it wasn't funny enough.
Yeah, and that's right. It felt Disney did an after school special about, you know, families and, you know, the problems with the foster system and these travails of smoking. And it you're right, Pete, it wasn't funny. As much as I like a baseball movie, the baseball itself in that last game drove me nuts. I'm sorry. It's the game to win the division, and your pitcher's at 153 pitches.
I knew you were going to bring that up. Because I was explaining to my wife, I was like, in this day and age, that would like never in a million years. Back like
then, that would never in a million years.
Even then, I was a lot of pitches. But like, if a pitcher was doing well, back in those days, they would leave them in for quite a while. They usually wouldn't leave them in for all nine innings. But like now it's like, oh, they got to 100 pitches. Take them out. You know,
well, and he wasn't doing well.
Right.
He loaded the bases.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't care if he's dying. Bring in the reliever. I mean, come on.
Well, and no one knew that but the kid.
Well, right. But and so if you're it's, you know, he's saying, no, you have to leave him in. No, you have to leave him in. But he also told him there's no angels coming.
Some angels. Right.
So it just that bugged me a lot, especially because the rest of the baseball was fine. I didn't care. You know, yes, there were the funny parts about, you know, the ball moving around and whatever and the super flying. I didn't care about that. But some of the baseball plays that they made were legitimate. Like the double play they turned was a nice double play that they turned. It was. Up until then, the baseball had been pretty good. And then to throw that in at the end kind of was a little jarring for me. Now, I wouldn't have noticed as a 12-year-old. And part of it is you can often tell the target for a movie by the age of its main character. And you can really do that on like young adult books. The age of the main character is usually about who the book is intended for within a year or two. And our elementary teacher Gina in the background is nodding, and Steve, the fact that he was, you know, the character was, you know, 11, 12. They never actually said his age, I don't think, but apparently he was supposed to be, you know, 10 to 12. So that humor, you're right, Pete, that humor was very much directed at 10 to 12 year olds.
Yeah, for sure.
I have a feeling that if I had not seen this when I was young, I would be having a little bit harsher reaction than I am right now, but it definitely, this is one of those where I almost wish we didn't go back and watch it. Cause I remembered it being a better movie than it actually is. So, okay. Well, like, cause remember I was 12 or 13 when I watched it the first time, and you remember the funny parts and, you know, him flapping his arms. That's right. The part, and really, all you remember from this is mostly the flapping the arms, the Tony Danza dying. I remember that part, and them getting adopted by the manager at the end. It felt like the announcer. They wanted to kind of do a cut. They almost wanted to go off of the Bob Uecker character in Major League, sometimes on some of the comments where it's, you know, being a smart aleck instead of just a jerk, but which may work. So anyway, okay. As we've done sometimes, is there, if we were remaking this movie today, and we tighten up the story, because I'm sorry, he doesn't make his wish until about 25 minutes into this movie.
Yeah.
So the first 25 minutes is just set up, which I think is part of what made it seem so long. But if, okay, assuming we had the story and everything fixed, who would you cast in an update version? And I don't need every character. You can give me one character. You can give me a couple characters. And I'll, Kate, are you ready to go? Or do you need to pass?
I know one of mine that I would do.
Go for it.
In the Christopher Lloyd character, I would want it to be a woman, for one thing. Oh, that. Okay, hang on. I got to go back for a second, because one part that I loved in this movie is when he's saying his prayer and he was like, man, God, or man or woman. And then he goes, amen. And then he sits back and he goes, or a woman. And I so far ahead of its time. And I love it.
I can't believe it was so woke back in the
so good. I love that. I would cast Christopher Lloyd Webber as like an Octavia Spencer, as a Taraji P. Henson, as even maybe a Whoopi Goldberg, maybe like someone that is how I envision like this, like just beautiful woman who's hilarious. And that is how I picture when I was like, okay, what would I change? Yeah, probably like a Taraji or, yeah, that's, and then I need a minute to think on the others, but I think that's my big one.
Hey, I got a question. Mm-hmm. Did Christopher Lloyd Webber write Taxi of the Opera?
You got jokes tonight. Bertel, well, you got jokes. Lloyd
Webber.
Can I turn Derek off with?
Yeah, we don't have the power to drop Derek. The
power
down.
Now.
Gina does.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right, Pete, what about you?
So I think I don't know if it's only because he's been in the news recently, but I thought as the manager, I think he's probably about the right age for it. I was thinking Robert Downey Jr. would do really well as because the manager, again, it's probably because the news lately, which we'll talk about. But like, so Danny Glover starts this movie as biggest jerk, right? And I think that Robert Downey could, but he has to be able to switch. You have to initially dislike the character a lot, but he has to be able to switch it over to be likable. And I think Robert Downey Jr. at this age could pull that off. I think that would be a good choice for the manager. That's the only one I could really think of. I mean, the ball players were so interchangeable that, you know, I don't think there's a big role there. And I can't say I know enough kid actors to be like, oh, it should be that kid, you know? So that's what I would go with. I do like Kate's idea of the, you know, like Taraji P. Henson as the head angel. I would like to see more of the other angels, though. I think I would like that to be like a group of three or four angels that all get a little bit of characterization, as opposed to one angel that we get to meet, and then the other ones are just CGI ghosts, sort of. So, Steve, what about you?
I'm going to add on. So for the lead, his name's Roger, by the way, would be the actor who did Young Sheldon, Ian Armitage, I think, or whatever.
But by this, he's almost a little old.
What's that?
He's almost a little old.
Well, if you're recasting the movie, you would go a little bit older.
Yeah.
And it would play more into sort of the dad story that he would be, he would, like, if you're going to go down that way, you would sort of figure out, he could figure out what's going on. So,
yeah.
But I agree with
still Kate, play maybe. Like 14, 15.
Yeah.
Okay. Kate, what's your comment? Yeah,
the comedy that Neil McDonough, is that how I say his name?
Mm-hmm.
Was very similar to Rob Schneider. in like The Waterboy and all of the Adam Sandler films that he's been in. So I could see him playing that silly slapstick character. He's very good at that type of humor. So that was another one I had.
Okay. For me, my initial thought on the Angel, my gut reaction was actually Tom Hanks. I would not be able to watch that without seeing him in a league of their own.
Right.
Yeah. So to me, that wouldn't really work. Then I would almost put him in as he would have been a good, like the owner. The Gene Autry character.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to find the actors that, again, I would have an issue because I've never actually thought Robert Downey Jr. had a likable character in many of his movies. He's always been the jerk to me, the cocky jerk to me.
Mm.
One I thought of, another one who would have taken the head angel a completely different direction would be Johnny Depp. That could go so many different directions.
Oh, yeah, that could be. I could see that. A young Tom Holland, not Tom Holland now, but a young Tom Holland could have played
Roger.
You've got to have that. And this is what Tom Holland is so good at. You've got to have that.
Pair him with a young McKenna Grace as JP.
Yeah. You have to have that spark of innocence. And Tom Holland is so good at that. Having that undeniable innocence.
Yeah. Okay. So as we always do on movies, we do pixie dust ratings out of 5. And I'm going to ask you to rate it watching it now. What would you give Angels in the Outfield, Kate?
Yeah, I'd give it a 4. I found this movie enjoyable. I found it enjoyable. Yeah, there were things about it that were not great, but to me, if you can get me to say, I would watch this movie again, that's like, I can't go any lower than a 3.5, and it feels higher than a 3.5, but it's definitely not a 4.5 or a 5 to me. Okay. So I'm going to give it a solid 4.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a 3. As I said, I did enjoy it. It's not one I would go back to a lot, though, I would say. And that's kind of what makes it a 3. You know, I would certainly recommend it. Even the heavier aspects of it, I think, like letting kids see that type of story in a movie, there's nothing wrong with it, right? So, see how other kids deal with difficult situations and things like that. So I think I give this a solid 3. Steve?
I'm going to go with 2.5. I thought it was okay. I enjoyed seeing it again, but the lack of a really good story and sort of the cluckiness of it, 2.5.
And I'm going to go with 3. Because as I was talking to my wife, again, I don't know that I would go watch this again on my own. But if someone said, hey, let's watch Angels in the Outfield, I'd go, yeah, okay. I'd sit there and watch it while if it was on. So, or if someone, hey, what's a fun baseball movie that, I like some of, younger kids, older, but, the Disney baseball movies. What's one? I would put this in there. So, it's a decent movie. So Now for the first time in a while, we actually have some Disney Plus news.
We do. Just a little bit in MCU news, Robert Downey Jr. has been cast as Dr. Doom, the replacement villain for Kang in the upcoming Avengers movies.
And actually I talked to our resident Marvel expert, Micah, who some of you may not remember. This does follow a comic book line where Dr. Doom and Iron Man were kind of similar and were like in similar universes with, as we said when we were talking, he doesn't really ever remove his mask.
Right. So, I mean, that's the big thing about Doctor Doom in the comics anyway. Now, the live action versions of Fantastic Four we've seen in the past have had a character that eventually becomes Doctor Doom or whatever. But yeah, I at first I heard it, I was like, oh, I hope they're not going to make, like, it's a variant of Tony Stark that's now Doctor Doom, because I'm like sick to death of variants. I gave
nothing like that in any of the press I've been looking.
Yeah.
At.
So I really do hope that it's more of Robert Downey Jr. is playing the character, but the character is behind the mask. And you know, I mean, I think, again, I think he's a good actor. I think he could play the role well. Dr. Doom less is more also. Like you don't want 40 minutes of Dr. Doom in your movie, particularly. You want
20 of big evil Dr. Doom.
Right.
No, yeah. Kingsman and the rest of it.
Right. So, I'm okay with it. You know, it does make sense. They're also bringing back the Russo brothers who directed
Infinity War and Endgame.
Infinity War and Endgame, but also the two Captain America movies, Civil War and
Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier, which are two of my favorite Marvel movies, quite honestly. So hopefully they can pull the magic off, bring the magic back that has been somewhat missing from Marvel the last couple of years. And I know no one else here except for Gina behind the scenes has seen Deadpool and Wolverine. Great movie, but it doesn't mean much to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in my, like, Deadpool, even in the Fox universe, was kind of off here on the side. And to me, this is still kind of off here on the side. It's its own weird thing that somehow everybody loves, but yeah, we'll see what they do with it.
All right. Sounds good. And last but not least, Agatha All Along will be released on Wednesday evenings this fall, a first for the MCU show.
Yeah. So MCUs have actually never been released on Wednesday evenings. So I'm guessing they're just kind of trying to play with what's going to work best for a release date now.
Is Halloween on a Wednesday?
Thursday. Halloween's a Thursday.
Okay, well, maybe I keep thinking they're trying to land that show such that it ends right around Halloween. So
yeah, I mean, I haven't seen an episode number count on that, but I'm guessing it will. I want to say it's either 8 or 10.
I don't think it's 10.
If it's 8, and they're doing, because I also see they're doing a 3-episode premiere. Or is it 2?
Actually, says what I'm seeing is 9 episodes.
Okay.
And they're doing at least a 2-episode premiere. Yeah.
Okay. So it comes out the 18th.
Yeah. Two episodes on the 18th.
5, 6, 7, 8 would be on the 30th.
Yeah, it's actually going to go past Halloween. Yeah. So
go to November. Well, maybe. Or they're going to throw a 2-episode finale at us on the 30th.
Oh, that could be too, I suppose.
To end up. Because it would make sense for it to end before Halloween. So, okay. Next week, we are going to look at the recent release, Young Woman and the Sea. This follows Rey as she's back on the... Oh, wait, sorry. it does follow Daisy...
Help. Ripley.
Daisy Ripley. Okay, Ridley. Ridley as the first female to swim the English Channel is the idea behind it. And everything she had to go to and all the doubters and that. And actually, I've seen a couple documentaries on this, and it's really a very interesting story. So I'm really actually interested to see how this goes. I don't think this was ever released in theaters, was it?
It was, but very limited. Because I think I tried to look it up, and I think it only made like $500,000. So I don't know if it was just released in like major markets or something like that.
Okay. So yeah, it was, yeah, box office is 581,000. So it was released, basically it was released on Memorial Day. So, or the weekend after Memorial Day. So not exactly a peak Disney peak movie weekend, when you especially remember the next weekend was Inside Out. So,
which I still want to see.
You can be Inside Out too, but yeah. Anyway, so guys, if you have suggestions, please email us at plusplatoon@gmail.com. Message us on Facebook. We've had a couple requests that way. We're going to try a couple different interesting shows. So make sure you watch our Facebook account, because we're going to be doing some fun announcements there. We're on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Send us any message and we'll get it. We do new shows every Thursday on YouTube and all the major podcasting services. For Kate, Pete, Steve, Gina, our background, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see everyone next week. Bye, guys.
All right.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Plus Platoon. Be sure to subscribe to the Plus Platoon podcast to keep getting great content each week. Then head over to Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews, as they help make the Plus Platoon visible to even more Disney Plus fans. Also, go to YouTube and like and subscribe to the Plus Platoon channel, where you can watch all future episodes live. If you have a question for the Plus Platoon, please send us an email to plusplatoon@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Plus Platoon.
The Plus Platoon is a Disney Plus fan podcast and is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or the Disney Plus streaming service. All opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the individual hosts and in no way reflect the views of the Walt Disney Company.
Thanks for watching, and be sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because the Plus Platoon is to be continued.